It's exactly the same test that, suppose you were in the traffic accident with the red light, green light dispute, and you had a trial in the trial court, and then you went to an appellate court. That's exactly the same standard they would use over the findings of that court. So there's nothing wrong with that standard. It's just, I think, how that standard combines with the way we find the facts that presents the problem. And so I believe that if we took the hearing section out of the department so that a fresh look was given to the factual determinations, and then it went on its normal course of appellate review through the Superior Court and the Supreme Court, that'd be fine. And I think it would shorten the process.
Any other questions? Deborah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That brings us to Chris Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Chris Christensen. I'm the general counsel to the Alaska court system. As the committee knows, as a general rule, the Supreme Court takes no position on legislation. The only exception is legislation such as HB 341, which directly affects the internal operation of the judicial branch. I have to advise the committee that the Supreme Court opposes the creation of a limited jurisdiction specialty court. This opposition is longstanding and relates to the concept of specialty courts in general, rather than the specific type of court which is created by HB 341. Specialty courts are used in other jurisdictions. In the last few years, the designer courts of choice have been drug courts and gun courts, and there has been federal money available to create such courts in the states. We have resisted this trend in Alaska because our small population does not generate enough of a caseload to keep these sorts of specialty courts busy, and we have a very small judiciary, and the use of our limited resources in a specific area reduces the flexibility which a small judiciary spread out over a large area needs. Just to give you an example, the New York State court system has an annual budget of about $1 billion and several thousand judicial officers. The population of New York makes it very easy to set up specialty courts, not one judge specialty courts, but multiple judge specialty courts. Alaska doesn't have that kind of population or that kind of caseload. To give you an example, the Superior Court judges here in Anchorage each carry a caseload of about 800 cases. Well, there are relatively few tax cases. Some of them might be very big, but there are relatively few. And my guess is that a tax judge will probably spend a tremendous amount of his or her time, perhaps a majority of his or her time, hearing other cases, hearing divorces and torts and contracts, because there really isn't the tax caseload to keep such a judge busy. Even if the tax caseload did warrant the creation of a one-judge court, we believe that a one-judge court would be inherently unworkable, and this is something that Ms. Vogt touched on. As you know, a litigant in an Alaska case has the right to preempt a judge within 5 days of the assignment of a judge to a case. Attorneys preempt specific judges when their experience leads them to conclude that they're less likely to get the result they want out of a specific judge. In this case, a tax judge is going to be appointed from a very limited number of attorneys. We might have 3,000 attorneys in the state of Alaska, but there's a very, very small number who specialize in tax cases and have done so for the last 4 years. These attorneys are, most of these attorneys, there is probably already a perception among their colleagues as to which side this attorney represents or which point of view this attorney has spent his career working on. Even if that's not the case, upon assuming office and rendering a few decisions, this tax court judge is going to be perceived by the industry and by the state as being as having a certain philosophical outlook. And I think the very first time that the judge renders a major decision against the state or against the industry, the losing party is going to preempt that judge for the remainder of his or her days on the court. The tax judge may find himself with a calendar consisting entirely of divorce cases, and the tax cases will be allocated among all the Superior Court judges the way they are now. Twice, just to give you some examples of this, and how it's happened in the past. Twice during the 5 years I've worked for the court system in this capacity, I've been called by a high-ranking person from the Department of Law who's told me in no uncertain terms that because of a decision rendered by a certain judge, there will never be, that the department will always preempt that judge on those types of cases. Once it was a criminal case that prompted this call, and as I understand it, this judge was preempted for the next few years on any criminal case. The other time it was a natural resources case. Now, in the scheme of things, this didn't really matter because there were 30 other Superior Court judges who could handle these cases. But if the purpose of creating a one-judge tax court is to have a specialist, somebody who's really an expert in tax law, then having that judge be preempted negates the whole purpose of creating the court. We do have a little bit of experience. About 25 years ago, the Supreme Court decided that it would create a family court. This was not done by the legislature. It was done by the Supremes here in Anchorage. And they decided that there was enough of a divorce and child custody caseload to just have one judge be the specialist. And as I understand it, the judge who was assigned this task had some very sincere religious beliefs, and there soon became a perception in the bar here in Anchorage that this judge's religious beliefs and his views of family values were carrying over into his decisions. And pretty soon the family law judge was doing no family law at all. So I'm afraid this is what's going to happen. Now, this is not to say that we're suggesting that there is not a problem here. The court believes, however, that the creation of a specialty court is probably not a workable way to address this specific problem that I think most people agree exists. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the members might have.
I have one. Chris, do you have any suggestions?
Mr. Chairman, I came here today to listen.
I understand. Would you entertain some coffee, Tom, that we could kick this around?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. We would like to help you solve the problem, not just present obstacles to a solution.
No questions? Any questions from the teleconferencing audience? Questions to the audience here? Thanks, Chris. Appreciate that. I guess I appreciate it. He just told me it wouldn't work. We have Kevin Tabler with Unical, our speaker.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Resource Committee. I have some very limited comments I'd like to make.
Would you identify yourself?
Yes. My name is Kevin Tabler. I'm land manager for Union Oil Company in California here in Alaska. I have some limited comments that we'd like to make just in general. Fortunately, our tax counsel couldn't be here today. Union has a significant presence in Alaska. We have oil and gas operations in Cook Inlet, an ammonia and urea plant located in Kenai, as well as other interests on the North Slope. Although I am not personally involved with Union's tax matters here in Alaska, nor hold myself out as any kind of tax expert, it would appear to me that an independent tax tribunal is a good idea, and Unical should support this bill or other bills that offer this type of independent judicial review for tax matters. The notion of an independent tax state tax tribunal is not a new idea. I've been informed that only a handful of states have adopted a judicial tax form. However, Union is in support of the proposition that a taxpayer should be afforded this type of review if a taxpayer so elects. The question of whether a state should have a tax tribunal has been a constant topic of interest in many states. Union supports the basic premise that a judicial tax form not connected with a Department of Revenue or a tax commissioner should be available in all states, not just Alaska. The basic underlying purpose of a tax court is to provide taxpayers with an independent judicial forum to hear only state tax appeals. This independent judicial forum would, in all practical terms, be on par with the federal tax court. An Alaska tax court would not and should not be made available only for oil and gas issues, but all taxpayers should subject to a variety of state taxes in Alaska. We believe, or we at Union applaud the committee in its efforts to establish an independent judicial tax tribunal here in Alaska. There will no doubt be additional opportunity to provide testimony in subsequent hearings. UNICAL has tax experts who unfortunately are unavailable to be here today, but will be following the progress of the bill and will be available for subsequent hearings. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Any comments from anything from teleconference? Anything from the audience? Thank you, Kevin.
Yes. Chairman.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. If there is any written testimony from any of the other people who have spoken that we don't have, I would surely appreciate a copy. We now have Richard Molina, excuse me, and Mr. Dickinson of Marathon.
Yes.
Do one or both of you wish to testify?
No, I'll testify. Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Hawk Dickinson. I'm General Tax Counsel of Marathon Oil Company. Nice to be here from Houston, Texas. Marathon has been here for a number of years. As a matter of fact, we're one of the first companies to come to Alaska. Along with the UNICAL, we discovered the Kenai gas field, one of the largest gas fields United States in early 1959. We're proud to have been operating here for many years. On behalf of Marathon, I'm honored to be commenting on the HB 341, the bill to create the tax court. It's very encouraging to hear Deborah Volk saying that the governor may introduce a bill that would perhaps work towards resolving some of these process of the hearing matters. I also like to thank Mr. Chairman and the committee for working on this particular bill. I think all the taxpayers in the state owe all of you a debt of gratitude. So what's wrong with the hearing system in Alaska? By now, I think you heard quite a bit about it. I think as Mr. Steve Mahoney testified, a lot is not right with the hearing system, and I believe a lot can be fixed with the hearing system. As a matter of fact, I don't know of any single company in the state that thinks they can consistently get a fair shake with the current hearing system on any meaningful issues. Of course, people generally understand in any given case that they have a chance to win or lose when an appeal is taken. But with the state of Alaska, the Department of Revenue, the perception, which is real, is that most people do not think that they can ever get a fair shake here. Taxpayers simply want a fair hearing on their disputes. Now, I like to say here, we're all trying to do the right thing, and nothing is personal against the Department of Revenue by making comments here today. Let me discuss some of the problems that we have in the state on the hearing process. The purpose of the hearing, of course, is that when a controversy arises, you want to get a fair shake. The question of whether your position is right or the government position is correct. From time to time, if a hearing decision is issued against government auditors, then the agency accounts for their actions. On the other hand, if no hearing officer is going to meaningfully oversee the auditor's actions, the auditors are then basically free to do whatever they want, regardless of what the law is. In other words, the agency is basically unaccountable to the public. The second situation I just described involving the unaccountability situation reflects basically the status of what we have now in the Alaska system. At the administrative hearing, because the system is so tilted in favor of the Department of Revenue, it is virtually impossible for a taxpayer to win any meaningful issue, at least any issue that involves any meaningful dollar amount. So the question of overseeing the auditors is also an important issue that ties into the fairness of the hearing process. Why is the Alaska system so tilted in favor of the Department of Revenue? Well, first, as you heard, the tax commissioner is both the auditor and the hearing officer's supervisor. He or she is the judge, jury, and the prosecutors, as you've heard. The auditors ultimately report to the commissioner, and the hearing officer also reports to the commissioner. Therefore, the way the system is, it is virtually impossible for the commissioner to separate the two functions, the audit and the hearing functions, no matter how one intends to exercise good faith in his or her official duties. This is sort of like the Bearing Bank problem in Singapore, or more lately, Dai Hua Bank problem that you might have read, where particularly with Bearings Bank, you may recall that about a year ago or so, where an employee in his early 30s had the power to both approve the derivative transactions and also had the audit powers to oversee his own transactions. And eventually, he lost about $1 billion for his company. Unless somebody not close to him reviews his investment activities, he was basically free to do whatever he wanted. In any large organization, there has to be a system of checks and balances. What is missing in the Alaska system is an effective procedure for checks and balances between the audit process and the hearing system. Second, in a court of law where a judge sits, he hears the evidence, he weighs the credibility of witnesses to see who is telling the truth, who is not, he weighs the demeanor of witnesses, weighs relative values of what one witness may say over another witness may say on the same subject matter, and other things that the judge may observe, see, and hear throughout the trial. In the Alaska hearing system, the commissioner, who is sometimes a lawyer and sometimes not, finally decides whether he will accept the hearing officer's recommendation, full or partial, or reject the hearing officer's recommendations altogether. Yet it is highly unlikely that the commissioner would have even sat through a hearing, hear a single word of a witness in that case. The third problem is cloud of secrecy that surrounds the hearing decision-making process. The public does not even know what takes place between the time that the hearing officer makes his or her recommendations to the commissioner, then renders his final decision. The taxpayers do not even have access as to what the hearing officer actually did. And so no one really knows, except the commissioner, as to what aspects of the hearing decision that might have been adopted or changed by the commissioner. When the tax commissioner has so much complete control over the hearing process and auditor's efforts are unchecked, you have the effect of a lid on the basket. Now, you all know that if somebody has a lid on the basket, nobody's going to make a basket. In fact, about 3 years ago, an employee of the Department of Revenue testified at a deposition and subsequently reaffirmed in a formal hearing process that the Department of Revenue has the lid on the basket, meaning that the state employees know whatever they propose at the audit level, they will not lose at the hearing level. As you can see, the hearing system in the state is substantially flawed. And it appears Alaska is only one of about four states that does not have either an independent hearing officer or trial de novo. Now, New Mexico, Vermont, in West Virginia, we believe are only other states that does not have either an independent hearing officer or trial de novo. So when Ms. Volks talks about minorities, we need to modify that by saying that it is a very distinct minority. In other words, while some states may have strictly an internal review process like Alaska, those states still have a correction system that allows for a completely new trial or de novo hearing, or hearing by an independent agency. That means no ex parte contact between the tax department and hearing officer. What can the legislature do to correct the system in Alaska? What can the legislature do to level the playing field? One remedy, of course, would be to create a tax court, which HB 341 calls for. If one has a federal tax controversy, one can go to federal district court, federal claims of court, and tax court. And a lot depends on what one wants to do. States like New York, Michigan, Ohio, New Jersey, Connecticut, and many other states have used the tax court system for many years. Matter of fact, the Board of Tax of Appeals in the federal system, which is now called the tax court, was created in the 1930s. Experience has shown that the tax court system works well. As I said before, in order for taxpayers to get a fair shake in the state, not only hearing system has to be fixed, but the auditors of the Department of Revenue would have to be checked as well. In my some 17 years of dealing with the Department of Revenue here in Alaska, I will tell you that there's been many instances where when the department decides to embark on a position when they didn't even have any regulations. In other times, when they do have regulations, they are acting without any legislature's support. Indeed, these unauthorized audit adjustments are subject of many hearings. One solution that the legislature may want to consider is to have proposed regulations reviewed by the by a legislative oversight committee and the governor's office, but they would also have the power to change or modify the proposed regulations issued by the Department of Revenue. One state which utilizes this kind of procedure is the state of Louisiana. Another is the state of Pennsylvania, where an independent regulatory review commission reviews all the tax regulations. This change in the process would assure balance of interest of all those concerned, both the public and the Department of Revenue's interest are brought forth there in the process. Experiences in other states have shown that such regulatory process will work well. Marathon continues to believe that the most taxpayers will want to pay all of the taxes that are lawfully due. But like yourself or myself, when we're dealing with our personal income taxes, we're not going to pay any more or less than what is legally due. We're going to pay what is legally due. Therefore, the Department of Revenue does not need to be engaging in any overzealous actions to collect taxes, nor is it necessary that the hearing procedure be rigged to lopsidedly favor the tax commissioner. In closing, I would like to quote from the Internal Revenue Service's bulletin, which describes their mission. The purpose of the Internal Revenue Service is to collect the proper amount of tax revenue at the least cost, serve the public by continually improving the quality of our products and services, and perform in a manner warranting the highest degree of public confidence in our integrity, efficiency, and fairness. The Internal Revenue Bulletin goes on to provide, with regard to Statement of Principles of Internal Revenue Administration, as follows. The function of the Internal Revenue Service is to administer the Internal Revenue Code. Tax policy for raising revenue is determined by Congress. With this in mind, it is the duty of the service to carry out that policy by correctly applying the laws enacted by Congress, to determine the reasonable meaning of the various codes provisions in light of the congressional purpose in enacting them, and to perform this work in fair and impartial manner with neither a government nor a taxpayer's point of view. Marathon would encourage the Alaska Department of Revenue to adopt and live by similar mission statements and principles as the IRS. The department should always know what their role is in relation to the legislature. Legislature makes the law, and the Department of Revenue is here to simply apply and enforce the law that the legislature has enacted. In a way, I have to tell you that it's a bit ironic that we would now be actually proposing that we live by the same rules as that the IRS has. Although we may disagree with the IRS at times, we believe the federal system is much more fair than Alaska's system. In fact, 46 other states have more fair system than Alaska. I believe most taxpayers would agree with me that it is not time for change. There's some sense of history here. We need to change a system that's been going on for too long. I'd like to, if I may, Mr. Chairman, just briefly comment on a few things that came out in connection with Ms. Volk's testimony here today, and then I'll quickly go through here. One is the question of when you have a formal hearing already, then you go on also with another de novo hearing to Superior Court. Well, I think perhaps that can be workable, and that is we can have a system where perhaps give the taxpayer an election to provide that so that perhaps with the smaller cases, taxpayer wish to not to go through a formal court proceeding, but rather with a less formal type of hearing before the department. Now, there was also a discussion with respect to perhaps the proposal that the department may make, and that is that have an independent hearing officer within the executive branch versus tax court. I think this is where I see it. Clearly, it's an attempt to improve the current system, and I think it is. I think if we do that, I think that's a good effort. But at the same time, I think we will still run into this balance of power between, more accurately, it's a separation of power more. I think there's still, within the executive branch, there seems to me inherent built-in conflict of interest where the executive branch, for its own needs and budget purposes, that it has a certain intent. Now, practically speaking, as a trial lawyer on tax cases, I can tell you that while on the surface that the hearing officer may resemble in the sense that you have a testimony of witnesses, direct examination, cross-examination, and so forth, but it is distinctly different than a court setting because it just the judge, the presence of a judge brings in commanding situation, and a lot of times what my personal experience has been that it just a lot of things in a formal hearing process, and that includes both sides, where either taxpayer or the Department of Revenue, AG's office, Attorney General's office, where they tend to go on and get into extraneous things, and I think the judge, typically what I've seen is would have no patience for that kind of thing. They can just get them around and move the things along. I really think that while in many times that the by having a judge, that judge, because he or she is handling a lot of times array, a broad range of cases, may not be an expert in tax matters as the hearing officer, but I think sometimes the fairness about a particular matter comes through. I mean, I think a little moment ago we discussed about a board composition where you'd have even ordinary citizens, and I've tried a case in Baton Rouge in Louisiana where Board of Tax Appeals in Louisiana has a system where you have, well, there was a housewife and one an accountant and one an engineer, and there was a special assistant where he knew the rules of evidence, and at the same time he knew he was basically the referee throughout the trial on the rules of evidence and so forth. And my experience has been that people know when things are right and when things are wrong, and sometimes having a non-technician may work out. I mean, this system is also used in Norway, I know of. I handle cases all over the world, and I find that I truly believe that in good faith that Alaska system is one of the more difficult systems there is. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today. I think this has been quite an experience for us. I think we're all simply trying to do the right thing. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dickinson. Are there any questions from the audience or the members of the committee? Any questions from the teleconference? Are there any other? Yes, Representative Hogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for those comments on that. I think that people placed in the position, ordinary people placed in a position of making a judgment, don't necessarily have to be experts on it. Legislature is a good example of that. Our jury system is a good example of that. We certainly have lay jurors that know nothing about a situation, and your job and other people's jobs are to present the facts, and it might be something to kick around as an equitable system to resolve these conflicts. And I don't know the exact structure how to do that, but it might be worth considering.
Thank you.
Just a
yes, Representative Cutt.
Representative Green, most of our boards and commissions do have lay people involved, but we also have professional from the industry or from the area that the board is addressing also on the board, for instance, the physician. Medical board. So I think while the layperson perspective is a good approach, I think I also have to have somebody that is more of an expert in that area, as we have workers' comp.
Sort of an executive director type thing. Or? Are there any candid observations or comments from any of the members of the audience? Certainly, we would entertain any. I don't want to use the word rebuttal. Any observations from the Department of Revenue, if you care to, Deborah? I don't want to make it an adversarial situation. I don't think it is adversarial.
No, I don't think so. Mr. Chairman, the only thing I might say is that one of the first things that Commissioner Condon and I did do was look at a mission statement for both of the tax divisions, and we did review the IRS mission statement together with the mission statements of a number of other states, and have put together something that I don't happen to have handy that is not too different from what the IRS has in mind. But John, do you?
It's very close to the mission statement.
It emphasizes that we have a self-assessing tax system, and that the
in order to collect the correct tax.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's the mission of the department to collect the correct tax. It's the prerogative of the legislature to set the tax policy, and emphasizes that we'd like to work toward clarity of the laws through regulations.
Thank you. Well, I would state, and I hope it's correctly, that this committee would certainly be interested in anything that is fair. Certainly we are looking out for the interests of the people of the state of Alaska. And I do want to thank all of you for taking the time to come in and testify, or if nothing else, just to listen to what was said. We certainly seem to have at least agreed among the divergent views. We've agreed that we do have some problems, that perhaps the final decision should be removed from the Department of Revenue, and that there must be some way that we can streamline this whole process so that we never again would allow ourselves to be encumbered as we were from the early days. And albeit that was a very unique situation, if we were to ever get ANWR on and all the other good things and other Prudhoe, I don't think we would stumble through the same problems that we did in the early days. So I do appreciate your coming, and we will take all the input that's been given. And I would also covet that someone who may not want to make a statement now, who, having heard what we've said, has a suggestion that's different, I would really appreciate hearing from you, either written, as we've said, over coffee, or in any manner, because I think I would personally, and I hope I speak for the committee, like to revise the bill to the point that it's a workable bill. And if the governor or the department through the governor's office were to come in with a different bill that does the same thing, that's fine. I'd be glad to drop off. But my concern is that we don't let this issue go unresolved just because we want to presume that it'll go away. We know it won't. And so, again, I would ask for anything that you may have. Again, I want to thank you. And with that, we're adjourned at 11:17. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate you.